It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff has the week off, but Stacey Higginbotham's here. And Aaron Newcomb, our favorite maker. We're going to talk about all the news, including Qualcomm. They've got some big announcements. Both Stacey and Aaron know a little bit about chipsets, so they'll have a lot to say about that. Lawsuits flying between Mozilla and Verizon, oath, and a whole lot more. Of course, the biggest Supreme Court case of the year. It has a lot to do with your privacy. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 434, recorded Wednesday, December 6th, 2017. Roku is Switzerland. This Week in Google is brought to you by 23andMe.com. Now through December 26th, get up to $50 off each 23andMe DNA kit. Get the ultimate personalized gift by going to 23andMe.com/twit. And by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 500 categories of business software and thousands of ratings and reviews from software users just like you. Visit Capterra.com/twig today. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. The first episode of December 2017. And Jeff Jarvis is off doing Santa Claus duties. So thank goodness Aaron Newcomb has decided to fill in. Aaron, Jeff's more like a Grinch, actually. But
what am I then? Am I a who?
You're a who the dog? In Whoville. Aaron works at New Relic. He is a regular on all of our shows, a maker. He founded the Benicia Makerspace, and I know you're doing a fundraiser for that, which we want
to absolutely
plug. So hang in there. We'll tell everybody about how they can do that. But before we do that, let me introduce Stacey Higginbotham, our regular. From Stacey on IoT.com. Great to see you, Stacey, from Austin, Texas. You are not in, we were talking before the show, you're not in Hawaii, I gather.
I am not in Hawaii, in my Austin home office where it is freaking cold, you guys.
Woo! It's not cold in Maui, at least judging by Paul Thurrott's Instagram. He's out there with an event, a Qualcomm Microsoft event. They've announced, we knew that they were working on WOA, Windows on ARM. They've announced their first ARM laptops from some of the big companies. And the story of Windows on ARM is, they say, quote, all day battery life, which is kind of, who knows what the heck that is. But I know you cover.
Is it a shot in the arm for ARM?
Sorry. Well, it's interesting because it will, you can tell Paul's working really, really hard right now at the Grand Wailea.
Nice, I've been there.
Yeah, it's, I have too. It's really beautiful. But anyway, no, I think that we'd also heard that Apple was doing ARM or might be doing ARM version. Now, if Apple does it, it'll be different.
Apple licenses ARM's technology not to reproduce exactly. They've got an architecture license, so they'll probably do their own version of the ARM chip.
Right.
So,
and a desktop Mac OS might be on ARM might be a very interesting product. It's sort of kind of where Apple's headed, given that ARM runs everything else Apple makes money on. And
I've been waiting for this for like 20, let's see, since like 2010 maybe, because I was like, you know, most of your computing, the same thing Google thought when they put out the Pixel or the Chromebook, whatever.
The Pixelbook.
Is that everything can be, most computing can be done in a browser.
Yeah.
And the browser equalizes everything. So why can't we start having ARM? And for a while, it was because there was only 32-bit. Now there's 64-bit. So now you can put it in servers. Once we did that, we started building out, you know, OSs that would work for that. And now here we are.
They run cooler. They run lower power. They're not, Aaron, they're RISC, not CISC, right? Does that mean inherently they're not as fast?
I don't think so. No, they can. Well, so it used to be the case, right? Anymore, they can certainly be just as not as powerful as a full blown. You know, you're not going to replace your gaming rig with ARM these days. But you can certainly do desktop computing with ARM, and we're seeing that already with, you know, all kinds of devices that could be converted. In fact, Mike Elgin wrote a great post the other day talking about, you know, why not, what's the next thing? Why not get rid of laptops and just use our phones everywhere? Plug your phone into a monitor and keyboard and go for it. And I agree.
Actually, Samsung did that already with Microsoft's done it with what do they call it? Kinect. What do they call it? They have a name for it. I think it's Samsung calls it Kinect. But I have this Dex. It's the Samsung dock thing. You put your phone in, you connect it to HDMI, to a monitor and to a mouse and a keyboard. And it's a much more desktop-like version of Android than you'd expect. And given how much Microsoft's pushed its Office, for instance, to Android, they really, and iOS for that matter, they're really pushing the mobile versions of Office. Other apps are doing the same thing. I think it's just a short way off. The reason I mentioned this to you, Aaron, particularly, is because you've been using ARM for a long time in things like Raspberry Pis. It's very popular with makers.
Yeah, exactly. And Microsoft actually released a version of Windows a few years ago for Raspberry Pi.
That's right. Yeah.
They called it, let's say, IoT or something like that, the IoT version. But it wasn't very popular. You couldn't do much with it. You couldn't get a desktop. So all you could do is really get into a terminal. So it was really for developers, and that's fine. But it sounds like where they're going here, obviously, with getting vendors like Asus and so forth on board, is they really want to bring Windows to the mainstream on ARM devices. And I think it's great. I think it's what's interesting about this is how will Intel respond? I think, you know, every time there's a competitive threat, it seems to force Intel into working even harder and doing something more innovative, kind of gets them out of their rut, so to speak. So I'm kind of interested to see where Intel is going. I mean, Intel has kind of, I don't want to say shied away, but they've drawn back a little bit from certainly from the developer maker community. By getting rid of their Edison platform, by end-of-lifing that. I know they're still involved in a lot of things. But
that was like a year old, right? That was very quick they put that.
Intel fails at anything requiring power. I mean, if you played with one of those Edison boards, they ran so hot compared to a Pi. It was not fun.
Yeah. But people built projects. They built ecosystems around the Edison. Yeah, now those
mistake,
are all
right?
defunct.
Yeah.
So.
So
I don't think...
Please.
Oh, like as a chip reporter, I have lots of thoughts on this.
I know you do. In fact, this isn't really exactly the right up the alley of This Week in Google, but it's a big breaking story, and it kind of is. And since I have two people who know a lot about this subject, I thought, well, let's talk about it.
So I think Intel's big challenge, and I've said this before, is it's really good at general purpose compute. And we're moving away from that because we're putting it into devices that need to be mobile, or we're saying, hey, we want to do artificial intelligence, which is going to require, you know, massive parallel processing that Intel hasn't really been historically good at, if you remember like Larrabee and things like that. So the challenge here is, is power more important than general purpose processing, and is ARM good enough at general purpose now that it can actually compete with Intel in the laptop space? And if you look at it like that, once if the market decides that ARM-based chips are, then crap, what does Intel do?
Yeah, I mean, they did kind of weirdly one of those cats and dogs sleeping together stories. They did a deal with their arch rival Radeon, ATI and AMD's Radeon, to put a graphics processor in the die with the Intel microprocessor. And that may be one of the ways that they hope to respond, obviously aimed at high-end computing. Today, Qualcomm, along with these laptops, announced its Snapdragon 845. And it's interesting to hear where Qualcomm is aiming the 845. They mentioned that it will allow 4K HDR video capture on smartphones. They're going to focus on AI immersion, which I I guess maybe AR, their name for AR, security, connectivity. Immersion is the ability to capture and render the world around you at high resolution and quality for more realistic results. They do have a GPU. It'll be Adreno 630 this time around. And they're putting a image signal processor in the die as well. This is a 10-nanometer die, which means even though these chips are really small, and Paul had a picture of the 845, at 10 nanometers, you can pack a lot of functionality into that little die. So,
you know what's funny?
Yeah.
Qualcomm's Adreno, their graphics processor, they actually bought from AMD after it bought ATI all the way back in 2005.
Interesting. That is funny.
So
that is interesting. Of course, this the Pixel 2 XL just is about to get Android 8.1, Oreo 8.1, which would turn on the image processor in this phone, which hasn't been on up to now. For those of us who have Pixel 2s, it'll turn that on. So I think that is telling also that Qualcomm is putting an image signal processor into the 845 as well. I don't know if it's the same one that Google's using. It's a Spectre 280 image processor.
No, Google built their own, didn't they?
Google did their own thing. Okay. That's the other trend, of course. Apple and, you know, everybody wants to build their own based on ARM architectures, but build their own. Mm-hmm. That's a difference.
That's why it's so good to be ARM right now.
It's good to be ARM because they don't make any chips. They don't need to. Ultra HD color capture. In these new chips, cameras can capture more color volume than before. I think they mean that's a broader range of colors. Mobile
photography. You can see like hummingbirds or dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to go from 8 to 10-bit color. Oh, wow. And the color gamut will be Rec 2020, which means it's a little brighter. Qualcomm's not going to say things like as the, what was it, the 810 that turned into a, you could also fry an egg with it. or was it the 820? It might have been the 820 or 821.
I think it's 820.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, here comes this is a battle that's going to rage, and I love it because you know who benefits from that kind of competition? It's us. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Whenever we used to talk to the big data center guys, I'm like, guys, ARM is not even going to work on your servers. And they're all like, yeah, we got to keep Intel in line, though.
Well, and power is a big concern in data centers, right? That's like the biggest concern.
It is, but our ARM was not ready for the data centers. But what's really cool, and this is super kind of subtle, but I think it's worth talking about. So for a long time, you only had Intel and x86, right? And so what Intel gave you, you took. With ARM, because they offer these architecture licenses, you can actually develop a variety of different ARM-based chips to offer a vendor based on different specs, which actually brings a lot more competition or potential competition and potential feature competition.
Yeah, so, well, look what you've got. You've got Apple. You've got Qualcomm. Are there other big ARM licensees that I should be?
Oh yeah, like Cavium, Google, Amazon all have architecture licenses in different. They have gone in. I wish I had paid attention to their most recent shareholder thing, but they've gone from like having a dozen architecture licenses like 5 years ago to having like more than 30. Wow. I mean, it's a huge growth in architecture licenses.
So I didn't know this. I'm learning something today. Roland00 in our chat room says Adreno, the name for the graphics processor in the Qualcomm Snapdragon chips, is an anagram of Radeon, the technology that AMD and ATI created. It was originally called Imagion, which I think they had to change the name because how would you Imagion? That was ATI's name. AMD acquired it in 2006. Qualcomm renamed Imagion, or whatever the hell, to Adreno as an anagram, according to Wikipedia, and Roland00, an anagram of Radeon. Anyway, we'll have a lot more on Windows on ARM and the new Windows laptops based on the ARM chip, which are definitely the proof of concept. Of course, Google's been doing this for a while because there are ARM Chromebooks. There have been for some time. You could get the Samsung Chromebook in ARM or Intel flavors. And while some people seem to think that the Intel version, the Chromebook Pro, is faster than the Chromebook Plus, I bought two Chromebook Pluses for my kids, and they love them. And I don't think they're slow at all, and they run Android software perfectly well. So, as you'd expect. All right, let's take a little break. There's lots more to talk about, including Cher. It's her fault, by the way, that everybody's agitating for all this net neutrality stuff, according to Ajit Pai.
I thought it was Alyssa Milano's.
And okay. Melissa Milano. And Ajit Pai, as we speak, is speaking in secret to his former employer, Verizon.
Okay, we'll clarify that for you.
Oh, he's not.
After the break, we'll get a little bit more clarity.
Okay.
There's the tease.
What's the real story? Google is shutting down the apps section of the Chrome Web Store. We'll tell you what's going on there as well. Lots of big news here, but first a word for your shopping list. I am so way ahead of the game. I have already purchased many of the Christmas gifts I'll be giving in a couple of weeks, including 23andMe for my mother and my sister. We're going to have the whole family. Oh, I have to get one more for my dad. I forgot. We're going to have the whole family. 23andMe is named after the 23 chromosomes that make you, you. It's a personal genetic service that helps you understand what your DNA says about you. And right now is a great time. I did 23andMe years ago. And I, you know, the nice thing about this is a gift that keeps on giving. When you spit in that vial, and that's all you have to do. There's no blood draw or anything. You'll get a little kit. They will get a little kit because I got it all packaged up for them. And they just spit into it. And then you send it back, and then your reports appear online. And the reports are constantly evolving. As we learn more, and we are really in a period of learning an awful lot about our genetics. So as a really good example, when I first did 23andMe, they didn't mention Neanderthals because at the time it was thought, oh, the Homo sapiens never interbred with Neanderthals. There's no Neanderthal genes in there. Then they were able to find some bones with Neanderthal remnants. They were able to analyze the genetics, and they found out, yes, we do have many of us Neanderthal genetics. Now, with 23andMe, shortly thereafter, they told me my Neanderthal ancestry. I have 265 Neanderthal variants. We didn't even know this until 2010. This is new stuff. I am less Neanderthal than most of you. It's only 4%. But 4% is a big chunk of DNA, actually, if you think about it. So I'm in seventh place out of my family and friends in the Neanderthal category. But I don't yet have my sister and my mom in there. I think it'd be very interesting. Speaking of your mom, among other reports, you can get the maternal and the paternal haplogroup in your ancestry reports that show how your family migrated the maternal line around the world. So going back, if you go back far enough, 65,000, actually 180,000 years ago, I, like most of us, came from Africa, Central Africa. Then 65,000 years ago, they migrated a little bit north to roughly where Kenya is. And then into the Middle East, 59,000 years ago. And then a little farther north, 47,000 years ago, to Central Europe, and then migrated from there into Europe itself. This is fascinating stuff. Another good thing about this gift is a great way to engage kids. By the way, I am in the same group as the Cheddar Man. That explains a lot. First discovered in 1903 in Cheddar Gorge, Somerset, England, Britain's oldest complete human skeleton. And he had the U5A variant in his maternal haplogroup as well. Mm-hmm. So this is a great way for kids to learn about DNA in a way that engages them, because this is what's great about this. It's about you. This is your report. And it's always advancing. You can read about the research and the discoveries that have been made lately. They also offer you for downloading the raw data. So, for instance, when you learn about something, you can look it up and see if you have that particular gene. That's been fascinating for me. You also learn a lot in the trait reports. The traits are kind of silly, but I think kind of fun. Like, can I smell asparagus odor? Likely. But I likely cannot taste bitter. And this is true. My genetics say I am likely to prefer salty or savory snacks. This is fun and informative and actually educational. There's also a DNA relative finder tool that'll help you connect with new relatives. I found a second cousin. It's so amazing. 23andMe, 75 online reports in ancestry, wellness, traits, carrier status. And this holiday, you can give that as a gift that is as unique as the ones you love with a DNA kit from 23andMe. Now through December 26th, you'll get up to $50 off every kit. That's why I bought a bunch of them. When you go to 23andme.com/twit. 23andme.com/twit. Make the holidays even more special with 23andMe. 23andme.com/twit. And this is Ann Wojcicki's company, one of the Wojcicki sisters. Her sister Susan runs, or is it the other way around? I get them confused.
Susan runs YouTube.
Susan runs YouTube, yeah.
And Ann is, I don't know what she is.
Ann was married to Larry, no, Sergey. I can never, it's all intermittent. It's because their mom, Esther Wojcicki, rented the garage to those young boys, Larry and Sergey, when Google was first starting. And then the sisters, and then you know how that happens. You can find out about it if you don't know in 23andMe. All right, where did I get it wrong? Is Ajit Pai not speaking to Verizon, Stacey Higginbotham?
He's at Verizon, but it is a telecommunications and media forum event.
Not a keynote.
It is a keynote at this particular event, but there are other speakers, and he's not speaking specifically to Verizon. He's speaking to the 100-some-odd people who are at this particular event.
And so, it's under the Chatham House rule.
Oh, God. I saw that and I thought instantly of Jeff.
It's a British rule that the organizer, Verizon, applied to the event.
The organizer isn't Verizon.
It's
the organizer is the internet or is the International Institute of Communications.
At Verizon's headquarters.
The event, for this particular event, it's held at Verizon's headquarters. Okay. They hold events all over the world.
Oh, all right. So it really isn't a Verizon-connected thing. It's just the venue.
The venue is Verizon.
The IIC operates as a nonprofit.
Of the IIC.
Okay. It's a nonprofit.
So, I'm not saying that it's less, but it's a it's an event for telecom people.
All right. And the Chatham rules were applied by the IIC so that people can speak freely, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, yes, should Ajit Pai be hanging out at Verizon, you know, a week before he's trying to destroy
that
neutrality?
The optics aren't great, and he was formerly a counsel at Verizon, right?
But the optics, I mean...
Who cares about optics when you're Ajit Pai?
No one in this administration cares about optics.
Who cares? we don't need to worry about optics. We are the government. I think, be still holding the vote, even though numbers of people have said, look, you can't have the vote because the comments were screwed up. We think it was taken over by a lot of phony comments, as many as a million phony pro, you know.
That stole normal people's identities. I cannot.
Yes.
That's what's so stunning. Not only are these robo comments, they're robo comments masquerading as individual consumers' comments.
There's actually a database. There's a database you can go to figure out if your comments, more than half of the 21 million public comments supporting the rule change were likely faked. And faked, I might add, in the direction of repealing net neutrality. So the Attorney General of New York State, Eric Schneiderman, has put up a site where you can see if a comment used your name in vain. So you enter your name, and actually, I did comment, and this does not find my actual comment, so I don't know really if this it's searching right now. That's the blank screen, and I see the little logo in the bottom. We are searching.
I like state government web design right there.
Right there. Okay, searched, perg. Delivery, FCC, NN comment, Google Docs, PDF, updated comment. I don't know. Is that my comment? Actually, I don't think
that might be your comment.
Well, is it? Let's see. Well, nope. It's maybe I signed this. Oh, yeah. I must have been on the 56,000 signatures. Don't kill net neutrality. Well, if it was me or not, it might have been my dad. Suppose one problem is we have the same name. Here's the net neutrality petition signers. I don't think I sign any petitions. I don't really believe in petitions. But I guess I'm on the list of signers for a couple of petitions.
And it may have searched all the way back to the original 2015.
Yeah, okay. It goes way back. But I've been very active.
My name was not used.
Oh, here it is. I kind of wanted here's my to actual use. Comment. Good, it does have it. There, and that's it, and that is me. And it was disseminated. Does that mean they took the semen out of it? What does that mean? They disseminated it.
They sent it to the commissioners.
Oh, good.
That was sent. I am an internet
broadcaster. My company, Twit TV, creates video and audio programming that reaches 7 million people a month with revenues approaching $10 million yearly. Our shows are distributed all over the world via the thing called the internet. We would not exist without a free and open internet. Last mile access to our audience via ISPs is critical. And allowing ISPs to prioritize traffic could put me and my 25 employees out of work. Please protect net neutrality, I said. That was quite elegantly
put. It is. That's a good comment.
Well, I wanted them to understand the economic argument. Because that's the argument on the other side as well. We're just, we're light touching federal regulation. But this is federal regulation of businesses that would do me harm. So I don't mind. Okay. I'm going to take a deep breath. Your name was not used in vain?
My name was not.
No one would use Higginbotham in vain.
No, it's probably not. I did write a story about net neutrality in my newsletter last week. And this doesn't get brought up a lot, but I think it's worthwhile, partially because I wrote it. So obviously I think it's worthwhile.
Very worthwhile.
But the point I would like to make is, especially when it comes to IoT, we don't know what we're building. We didn't know back in, you know, the early days of the web what we were building. We didn't know back in the days of mobile broadband what we were building and what would come of that. And the reason we got to that point is because people were allowed to innovate. And frankly, once we got to wireless, it was because they were allowed to innovate around the carriers once Apple launched its app store and Google launched their app store. So my thought and point here is we're at another crucial development point in technology and of the internet with the Internet of Things. And to put these rules to abandon net neutrality now could shape our future at this point and make it different, probably worse, less innovative. So that was kind of the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, but I guess you could make the argument, well, this is not the time. When you have these nascent technologies, is not the time to regulate because we don't know, as you say, we don't know where they're going.
I'm just talking about net neutrality.
We want to protect. It's like we want to protect these and give them a chance to grow without the problem is the incumbents, right? The companies that are already doing it. And I include, by the way, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon.
Okay. Well, no, because you're conflating two things, and I don't want people to do this because the telco industry is really trying hard to conflate these two things.
Yes. In fact, that's one of the things Ajit Pai is saying is, but don't blame Comcast, blame Twitter.
So purely net neutrality right now, as it's regulated, is to deal with the issue of infrastructure, which is anti-competitive here when it comes to broadband, or it's not competitive, rather, not anti-competitive. And these incumbent players have too much power just providing bits through a pipe. Now, if you want to talk about different layers, like if you think of your OSI stack, right? If you want to talk about different layers higher up at the application layer, let's talk about Google and Facebook, but that is not a net neutrality issue to me. That is a completely different issue. I'm not actually sure the FCC has the rules to regulate that. I know that they've kind of dabbled in it, but you could argue that the FTC is better.
Yeah, I would say that. But I would also point out that that is why you can't really count on an alliance if you're for net neutrality with these big companies, because frankly, it's not going to hurt them. Although we can go back to 2005 when Ed Whitaker at AT&T said I think the fundamental question that the ISPs are this is what really is bugging them. He said, quote, "Why should Google be allowed to use my pipes? The internet can't be free in that sense because we and the cable companies have made an investment. And for a Google or Yahoo or Vonage or anybody to expect to use our pipes free is nuts."
But that's what consumers pay for. They just want it on both sides. And that is a stupid argument. It was stupid back in 2015 or 2005. And you know what's really, is frustrating slash possibly one day could be hilarious is the cable companies, the ISPs, have long had a decision to make, and they've long chose the path of scarcity. And if you look at other parallels in technology, you will see a company like Intel. Way back in the 80s, they were like, hey, we've got this awesome chip technology and we can scale it up. Let's fund people to actually build on this stuff. And they did. They funded EA. They funded all these companies. And we as a country went out and bought faster and faster chips. And we bought them from Intel. So yay. The telcos, instead of saying, hey, let's learn how to deliver broadband because we're really good at that and people are going to totally need this in the future, let's figure out how to optimize our investments, deliver it super cheaply, a la Intel or Google or Facebook, how they've done, they said, nope. Let's just figure out how we can control this and charge people extra money. So we'll charge them coming in, we'll charge them coming out. It's a completely different way of thinking, utterly at odds with the way that computers and technology work, basically. So,
Congress
and,
has
and the other
go
the
ahead.
Other big part of this, real quick, and I'll let you jump in, Leo. The other big part of this that drives me nuts, and I'm sure you guys have talked about this ad nauseum, but
well, we're going to keep talking about it as long as they keep assaulting it.
We should keep talking about it. But whenever the arguments that Stacey just made are brought up, then they come back with this counter argument that says, oh, well, it's okay because we should let competition improve the marketplace. Just let's let competition rule here. We all know that people have choices, blah, 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 blah. But the fact is people don't have choices. I can't go to an alternative. I have to use Comcast if I want the level of service that I get right now. If I want to do work from my home, Comcast is the only choice because the other alternatives I have aren't fast enough to allow me to do that. And so that's another bogus argument that keeps getting thrown out is, well, we should just let competition take over. It's like we've been down this road. They tried to do this in the past when they first came up with these rules and regs, and they said competition would make this work, and it hasn't made it work.
Congress has already
going forward.
Congress, by the way, which can override anything the FCC does. The FCC only operates with the oversight of Congress, has received 500,000 calls from this site alone, battleforthenet.com. 500,000 calls. You could do it too if you go to battleforthenet.com. The vote is a week from tomorrow, but that won't be the end of it. Battle for the Net points out that the next step is to pass legislation that actively allows throttling and extra fees and censorship on the internet. And so they're not even done yet. First, we repeal Title II regulation, but then Congress is going to step in, is expected to step in, and explicitly allow ISPs to start charging.
And okay, so if that happens, what will happen is this. We will start treating broadband as a scarce resource, and we will get companies innovating around it instead of on it. And you'll see this with Google investments in 5G, you see it with companies like Starry trying to do, millimeter wave home delivery. If you talk to Dane, I'm sure he'll start thinking about ways,
It's not ideal. I mean, we have a system that's public, it's free, it's open. But you're right. I mean, that's what technology does. It routes around the damage.
So,
but what would it look like? Would it be a second tier internet? Would it be a different internet?
No, I mean, right now we've got fixed wireless is kind of a huge option. So people are looking at like millimeter wave spectrum. You're going to have lots of little small cells in dense areas. It's going to screw over the rural people, as always happens. And you'll have these alternate ISPs, and they won't be crappy internet. So, yeah.
So a couple of things to watch for. First of all, battleforthenet.com. Contact your member of Congress. This has been very effective. With SOPA, it was very effective in getting the Title II regulation put in. It was very effective. Tom Wheeler resisted that until he received millions of comments saying, do it. And we were very active in that campaign. So we know we can affect this. take advantage of that, battleforthenet.com. Then watch what Congress does, because if Pai gets his vote, he probably will in 1 week, then the next step is for Congress to step in. And that's why you have to stay in touch with Congress. And the other thing to watch for, as we pointed out, is people who, basically the big ISPs, are trying to deflect blame for this to the big four, to the big companies, to Google, Amazon, Facebook, and say, oh, it's Twitter's fault. It's Share's fault. And Ajit Pai's already been saying that. He says that the problem isn't AT&T, Charter, and Comcast, and Verizon. The problem is Twitter. And so watch for that deflection, because that isn't even, it's not, as you point out, it's not germane. It's not even related, Stacey. All right. Have we said everything we want to say about that? We'll probably say it again next week and the week after, but please do.
I've been saying it for almost a decade.
I know. Please do. Because I mean, it's a personal issue for all of us who listen to podcasts, for instance. This, you know, podcasting exists because people can create content and distribute it over the internet at very low cost. We don't want to go back to the days where only the rich could afford the radio transmitters and the TV transmitters and the newspapers. That's not the way it should be.
And it's a personal issue for consumers. You would not have Waze if carriers could charge for that kind of stuff.
Right.
You would not have Dark Sky. You would not have so many things. If you go back, and a lot of people unfortunately don't remember this, but like, God, remember carrier app stores? Oh, it was heinous.
Oh, that was so horrible. Oh my God, right. You'd buy apps from the carriers and ringtones that would expire after 3 months and you have to buy them again.
Yeah. So think about, that's where your innovation is going to be clogged at. And it's horrible. And I'm not exaggerating this. I mean, look at all the benefits that we have gotten from our open internet culture. Yeah. You cannot, and we don't know what's next. And, okay, that's all. I'm done.
And you know, Aaron, you make a point. Competition would solve this. In fact, Ben Thompson on Stratechery, he changed the headline because the headline was really, you know, terrible. Inflammatory. Why Ajit Pai is right. That's not really what he was saying. What he was saying is if we have competition, then Ajit Pai is right. But we got to be very clear. We don't have competition because of anti-competitive moves by the FCC at the behest of AT&T and Verizon going back years. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah. There is no competition. 86% of the country has two choices of internet service providers.
And they're crap choices because it's cable or DSL.
Right.
And DSL is not a choice.
Right.
Okay.
Not anymore. It used to be okay, right? But we've gone beyond that. I mean, the difference, it's a, you know, 20x difference in throughput between what I can get from DSL and what I can get from cable. And, you know, I think you're right. I mean, the wireless option may be the best one going forward, because at least then you don't have to worry about, you know, access rights and things like that. You just have to worry about where you can put the towers.
But watch out for another thing to watch out for, because these companies understand that there'll be competition then from other, you know, new arenas. As you know, you squeeze in one area, it pops out in another. And already part of this is, oh, and by the way, no municipal Wi-Fi. No states can do their own Wi-Fi thing. No. And no states can pass any net neutrality bills. No. So this is really a grab by Comcast, Verizon, AT&T. They're really grabbing and saying and holding on tight. And they don't want anybody else to give them an end around. So, yeah, there are great technologies possible out there. But these companies are not stupid. And they know exactly where the threats are coming from. And since they have a tame Congress and a pet FCC, they're going to use those tools, and we have to stop them. We really do.
Yep.
Let's see. The Chrome Store is no longer going to offer apps. Anybody have any idea what's going? I think Google has said this before, but they're actually doing it now. They're shutting down the apps section. Progressive web apps are the future. And Google's all behind this, but interestingly, so is Microsoft. We've talked a lot about PWA, Progressive Web Apps, on Windows Weekly. And until you or somebody else tells me it's a bad idea, I think this is a very good idea. The idea of a progressive web app is it starts as a web page. But it's not exactly the, you know, the web apps of the early iPhone. It starts as a web page, but when you go to that web page on your mobile or your desktop, it downloads assets which can then be run offline using something called service workers that are running on the desktop or running on the phone. So in effect, websites become apps. They use less bandwidth. They can run locally. They can run offline. And that's what Google is saying. Use progressive web apps, not Chrome apps. Agree? Disagree? Thoughts?
What happens with, like, what happens with the files after you're done using them? Like, if every website you go to on your phone gets stored someplace, like, so what's the caching and cleansing kind of process?
That's an interesting question. There must be a timeout for the resources at some point. You know, just as so cookies expire, you know, after 90 days or 60 days of disuse, you actually are starting to see that both on iOS and Android. They're both operating systems are looking for unused apps and moving them off the phone. And I think that's probably the first step towards that. That's okay. A good question. The service workers are persistent. And the idea is that these apps are somewhat persistent because if you go, you know, if you, for instance, Facebook, imagine Facebook, you don't have a Facebook app anymore. You just use your browser to go to Facebook, but Facebook then downloads the assets and make it effectively an app.
So I love it for all the common times. The reason I ask these questions is because there's so many, like, you know, every time you go to a restaurant, they're like, hey, you want our app? And you're like, no. Or right. You go to a certain website. So I'm thinking more the one-off or two-off kind of cases and what that, because everybody, and then the other question tied to that would be what permissions would you automatically end up granting these? Because, like, everybody wants your information. You don't actually have to give it to them today, which is nice.
Right.
Would you automatically give away location if you've accepted and bought into this progressive web app? I don't know.
I think there'd be a permission structure that you would it even works now with websites. Websites will say, you know, your browser will say, this website wants location information. Would you like to grant it? I think all of those things will continue. But the service workers will allow things like access to the camera, access to the GPS, access to physical hardware. That's what those service workers are there for. I like this idea. It's basically their HTML5. If you use React.js, for instance, that's a commonly used framework for these progressive web apps. Google has a whole getting started with progressive web apps page for developers where you write your first app, which I think is a weather app. So Google says this is for us. Now, of course, Google changes its mind regularly. The thing that encourages me is that it's not just Google in this case. Microsoft's doing the same thing. Google says this is for us the replacement for Chrome apps because it'll run on desktop. It'll run on mobile. It's a universal thing. It'll run on iOS and Android. It's cross-platform.
I mean, that would be great for developers.
That's the cool thing.
Yeah,
exactly. I look at this from a developer standpoint. I mean, anytime, and I'm not a huge, I do this as a hobbyist, right? So, but anytime I can write a web app versus a discrete app for a particular platform, I'll do it because that way I know I can access that information from anywhere. And so I think this is a push in the right direction. And also, I mean, who uses those Chrome apps? I was a big believer in it when they first came out. I was like, "Oh, this is cool. I can play this game."
Right.
But anymore, I just don't use them.
There's a few utilities. My Synology NAS has a note app that I've replaced Evernote with, and I'll give you actually a really good example that probably a lot of people use is Hangouts. Hangouts is now persistent. You can close Chrome, and Hangouts will continue to run. That's the text messaging, and since that's what my text messenger is, it gives me a desktop and mobile version of text messaging. But there's no reason that couldn't be a PWA. And by the way, Apple is also supporting this. This is really good news. When you see Microsoft, Apple, and Google all behind it, that's encouraging. So Apple is saying we're going to build this into Safari as well.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel a little bit better about privacy and permissions information kind of getting out there. Because I think you're optimistic to assume that will be taken care of. I think we always have to ask.
No, you're right. But I think, you know, certainly at least Apple, you know, is really very
never assumed, Leo, yeah, as a journalist. Oh, yeah,
they're really secure, aren't they? Especially with their root passwords. Boy.
Yeah, actually, we're going to do a whole security now. Steve didn't have time to do it for this week, but next Tuesday, the entire show will be devoted to the rapidly shrinking security platform of iOS. iOS was, for a while, like the gold standard for security, but probably mostly because users are having trouble. Apple has decided to favor data persistence and reliability over security. You know, people were losing their photos because they couldn't unlock their phone. And right. So Apple has said, maybe we went a little too far on that. So we're going to talk actually about that and the impacts of that next Tuesday. So why build? This is Google's website, developers.google.com. Why build a progressive web app worthy of being on the home screen? That's one thing. You know, web apps were always a second-class citizen to standalone apps. They weren't quite as good as fast. They didn't. The user interface wasn't. But the idea here, and boy, we've seen this, the industry go through this time and time again, is, oh, no, these will be first-class citizens, worthy of being on the home screen, works reliably no matter what the network conditions. That's actually pretty important, not just for here, but for in the developing world. So to lower the amount of data required just to do it, increased engagement, and that's what you were talking about, Stacey. You go to the Target webpage. Well, suddenly you have a Target app on your phone.
I don't want that. To be clear, that's not an advantage in my world.
Well, but I think a lot of users might. I'll give you a better example. Maybe OpenTable. Instead of installing, you want to make a reservation at a restaurant. You can do it on the OpenTable website, or you can install an OpenTable app. And if you ask Google Assistant to make a reservation for you, and remember, Google's been touting this since Google I/O a year ago. Mm-hmm. You make a reservation with Google Assistant, it was going to get a little bit of OpenTable onto your phone, download it. And then it was going to say, I did this with OpenTable. Would you like the app? Well, this would be much more seamless. It would just, in effect, give you an app for OpenTable. But you're right. I want to know about persistence. How long does that last? Am I suddenly going to have 5,000 apps on my phone?
Both persistence and data sharing
and permissions. Absolutely.
Because, like, I can see, like, OpenTable might really want my location all the time. But I don't see a reason to give OpenTable that information.
No. Absolutely not.
So,
well, there's also a different kind of persistency, which is persistence across devices, that would be great, right? If I could open up something on my laptop, one of these apps, and then go to that page, and I'm halfway through filling out a form or something, and I got to run, I'm busy. So I get on the BART, and I can then pull up the same thing on my phone and continue filling out that form. That's a huge time saver. So I don't know if these PWAs will help with that problem or not, but I run into this all the time where I'm halfway through completing a task and I've got to run and then I've got to start all over from the beginning again. It's so frustrating.
The other side effect of this is, and this might be something Google wants, it starts to disintermediate the App Store. Mm-hmm. You don't need to go to the App Store anymore. You just go to the website. And that's probably better for Google than Apple. Apple's App Store is a massive revenue generator for Apple. Tim Cook was just saying that in China, what was the number? Let me just look it up real quickly. It was the amount of money that Google made in China was billions, $17 billion. That's a quarter of the global App Store earnings over how long? It can't have been that very long. Is it just in 1 year? Total revenue throughout the store going to developers, remember, is $70 billion. But that means $30 billion for Apple. So the App Store is a cash cow for Apple. And this would kind of change things. Furthermore, if you're Amazon, you hate the App Store because you can have a Kindle app there. But if you sell books through the Kindle app, Apple takes a 30% chunk.
Right.
If you do it in the App Store, I mean, in the progressive web apps, it's just a website. I have a feeling Apple doesn't have quite the death grip on your revenue that they would otherwise.
So does that mean if I'm running the progressive web app, I can access YouTube on Amazon devices?
No. No. Let's talk about that. That's really frustrating. So by the way, it's personally frustrating because we tell people all the time, if you have an Echo Show, it's not a huge number of people, I would imagine, but I have several. I love the Echo Show. It's the Echo with a 7-inch screen on it. You can say, Echo, watch Twig on YouTube. Now, they that was when it first came out. It was nice. It was a full-screen experience. That Google killed that. Then it came back last week, and now Google says, no, it's Amazon's fault. They're it's not our app. It's their app, and we don't do it that way. And Amazon hasn't agreed to our terms. So we're killing YouTube access on the Amazon Echo. Furthermore, on January 1st, on the Fire TV. And this also, remember, is because Amazon won't sell Google products on the Amazon. So won't sell the Google Home on the Amazon store, right?
Or does it sell Nest? I think it still sells Nest, or it did.
No, it's, in fact, when Amazon released a camera of its own, they let me see. That's a good question.
Oh, yeah.
I think I remember them pulling the Nest. No, they do. In fact, Amazon's choice, the Nest Cam indoor security camera, works with a Echo.
Okay.
So they do still sell all the Nest stuff, but I don't
think... Well, maybe if Alphabet spins Nest back into the Google Pixel hardware division, that will change.
If I search for Google Home on Amazon, look what shows up. The Echo Dot.
Well, and... Same they are neck and neck on this. Yeah,
same thing with Chromecast. So I understand Google and Amazon are at each other. I think this is dumb of Amazon. Not because it's the show is this week in Google, but I think it's, if you want to be retailer to the world, you can't be, this is a net neutrality issue for retail. You can't be picking and choosing.
Don't call it that.
Well, it is.
Please don't call it. No, it is not. It is a
no, it's not net neutrality, but it's the same idea that a retailer should not discriminate against products because they compete with the retailer's products. Right?
Okay, no. The concept of net neutrality is that we view the internet and access to it as a basic right.
Okay.
Or as a public utility.
So, Amazon is not a public utility, so that's right.
So stop it, Leo. You're playing right into their hands. I'm shaking my
finger
at it.
But there's something wrong with a retailer that doesn't sell products that compete with its own products. Like if Whole Foods didn't sell Ragu pasta sauce, which they wouldn't anyway, but if they did, but just as an example, because they've got their 365 brand pasta sauce,
That's why the brands, the grocery store brands, what is it called when you don't have
generics?
A brand? Thank Bargain you. Brands? The generics are such a issue. And that's why actually a lot of companies don't let Trader Joe's, they don't let Trader Joe's make their stuff and put their stuff in Trader Joe's.
Right.
So this is a dynamic that plays out outside of
it's
the tech
world. It's not unusual. Okay.
I feel like
it's not, if Amazon pretends to be customer centric, not including stuff the customer wants, worse, surfacing their own product when you search for something you want.
Right. That's just, and also if you look at if your core business is getting eyeballs onto your property, then this really hurts. I've long been frustrated with Amazon Video because I can't cast it to my Chromecast from my device unless I cast my whole screen. And even then sometimes it blocks out the video. And so I've stopped using it. So Amazon, wake up. I'm not looking at your properties anymore. I'm not going to buy a video that might pop up in an ad or something like that because I'm not using your thing because I can't watch it. It's stupid. It's ridiculous.
But it is.
Do we know that
Amazon's
this is Amazon
right.
versus Google?
I don't know, because Amazon now is...
We're making an assumption again.
It could be Google. And, well, we know Google yanked YouTube from Amazon's show.
Right.
But we also
know that Google...
Oh, you mean Google's not putting its products on Amazon?
Yeah, like
why would
maybe
they do
Google
that?
Said, I don't want to sell the home there. Apple doesn't sell their stuff on Amazon.
I can't imagine that.
I don't know. I'm just, we're...
Right. Okay. We shouldn't.
Yeah,
make
we
the
don't know. You're right. As usual, Stacy is the voice of wisdom. We get all excited. Stacy slaps us down. That's okay.
I mean, I think it's totally crappy. I'm not against. I mean, as a consumer, I'm like, guys, get your crap together.
Yeah.
I'm sick of this.
Sick of it. But you don't have to buy stuff at Amazon. There are other places to buy stuff. I might point out.
But although, as a Prime member, I prefer to buy at Amazon. I'd buy my Apple gear there. I'd buy my Google Home there if I could.
And Link in our chat room says, I use my Fire Stick almost exclusively to watch YouTube videos. I'm watching Twig on it right now. This royally sucks. My Fire Stick is now pretty much worthless to me. Yeah, if you bought an Amazon TV device to watch YouTube on. See, I think that's going to bite them because I think that's certainly a lot of people... Mm-hmm. I know YouTube is their television, and they watch it on their Chromecast, or they watch it on their Apple TV, or they watch it on their Roku. If it's not on the Fire TV, that's bad for Amazon. In fact, I don't know whether it was Apple or Amazon that was keeping the Amazon Prime Video off of the Apple TV, but it's, as I said today, it finally emerges.
Scooter X points out that it is Amazon thwarting Google's ability to put their stuff in their stores.
It is?
Yeah, he said he posted a statement in the chat room from
Scooter knows all. We've been trying to reach agreement with Amazon to give consumers access to each other's products and services. But Amazon doesn't carry Google products like Chromecast and Google Home, doesn't make Prime Video available for Google Cast users, and last month stopped selling some of Nest's latest products. Given this lack of reciprocity, we are no longer supporting YouTube on Echo Show and Fire TV. We hope we can reach an agreement to resolve these issues soon. Thank you, Scooter X. That's Google's statement. And Google pointed out this isn't our app. You know, this is Amazon. Anyway, it's bad for. But again, dinosaurs battle. The little people at their feet are the ones getting squished. And here we are, you know, we love it that people could watch our shows easily with a single, you could still listen, but the idea that somebody who had a screen on their Echo device could watch our shows was really great. Amazon has also pulled the Twitch channel from Roku, apparently.
What?
Another thing that we're on.
Roku is like Switzerland.
Yeah, that's right. Roku is Switzerland. Damn it. There isn't a Twitch app on Apple TV either. Or on Android TV, although there is an app for the NVIDIA Shield tablet, not the Android TV. Huh. So, starting today, the official Twitch app for streaming is now a Fire TV exclusive. Who owns Twitch, I might add? Amazon!
Yeah. I guess they're trying to make a YouTube thing. I mean, the truth of it is, whoever has the most audience and power has the most power right now in these sorts of dynamics.
But
this is like the cable retrans disagreements that happen all the time. Yeah. And, you know, because those travel in part, retrans being an issue of public airwaves and access to public channels, the FCC gets involved. Because this is at the application layer, this could be an option or a thing that gets the FCC or probably the FTC involved. Uh-oh. Saying, hey, are you guys behaving well? So that might be the impetus to get people to regulate, you know, at the application layer. Uh-oh. And that'd be very interesting.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Consumers always end up suffering from this stuff. 'Cause we want to watch what we want, where we want it, when we want it, anytime.
And that was free.
For free. And well, but that's, can I tell you, that's what Twit does. We put ourselves anywhere anybody wants to watch us. As long as we get to count the viewers and you don't take out our ads and you don't charge people for it, you give it away. You know, it's everywhere. And, you know, in airplanes, it's actually on terrestrial television in some areas, you can watch our shows. Because our philosophy is, well, we make our money from the advertising, so the more eyeballs, the better. But that's because we're unaffiliated, you know. If Amazon bought us, and Jeff, I just want to say, for everything I might have said about Amazon, I would be acceptable to that, amenable to that idea. But if Amazon bought us, we might have to say, oh, yeah, you can't watch us on a Roku. I wouldn't like that.
No.
We built, you know, we intentionally, I always said, from day one, we want to be everywhere people want to see us. For free, easily accessible. Well, that's what makes podcasts work.
That's the content. Yeah, that's the content provider's mantra. As the distribution platform, you want exclusivity for something so people come to you.
I know. House of cards.
And the internet was supposed to eliminate the middleman as the distributor, but it hasn't because, you know, you still have to. You need a software, you need an OS, you need something. Still need
You still need the platforms. We're in the platform era, really. Actually, we never stopped being. It was Microsoft in the 90s, and now there's a little more competition. By the way, I'm very excited that Robin, what's her name, is going to get to be the star of House of Cards finally. Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, so
she's been the best thing about that.
Robin
for like
Wright
the last
is fabulous.
Years.
And it always bugged me a little bit. And they were making Kevin Spacey's character wimpier and weirder. they're throwing out everything they shot, and they're going to do a new eight episode arc with Robin Wright as a star, as it should be.
And then that'll wrap it up.
Yeah. Now and then the story is that Doug Stamper, who is the Weasley, chief of staff, is going to get the spinoff, the Doug Stamper Show.
Really? Let's just have all Robin Wright.
I love Robin Wright. You know, I don't need anybody else in that show. She is amazing.
Yeah, she's great.
Although part of what was amazing was the interplay between her and Spacey.
I think she could develop. I mean, because she is competent. She is evil in a way that women are never allowed to
be
evil.
I know, it's awesome.
And she is just like, you root for her though, because she is powerful. And I'm like, I would love to see her dynamic develop with anyone. And especially because it did get a little soapy. But
you know what?
You know, it's not as soapy.
I think Christopher Plummer is available. That's kind of an in-joke. All right. I'll explain it. Christopher Plummer, in 10 days, they reshot the movie, All the Money in the World, that they took Kevin Spacey's character out, and they reshot it with Christopher Plummer in 10 days, and the movie's coming out.
That's crazy.
Crazy. And now Christopher Plummer is going to play all the male leads in Hollywood from now on. He's the only one left who can act in these movies. Time Magazine, Person of the Year, Women of the Year. What do they call it? The truth tellers, the speak uppers, the talk abouters. It's not the president. Did you see this?
Thank goodness.
I know.
I did. The Me Too.
Yeah, I saw it this morning. I thought it was great.
Yeah, the Me Too. No, they have a name for it. Let me see if I can find it.
It's like Well Played, the Silence Breakers. That's what it is.
Silence Breakers.
Well Played, Time Magazine.
Silence Breakers. Oh, there's a guy in there. Look at that.
Terry Crews.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is, I think, you know what? I think that's accurate, actually. That has made a massive impact on not just politics, but culture at large, and Silicon Valley, too.
And they managed to still get Taylor Swift on the cover.
Because, by the way, do you think Time Magazine, now that it's about to be owned by Meredith, do you think that, guess who's going to be the person of the year next year? Just a wild shot. Maybe Ajit Pai.
Do you think Time will still exist as a magazine? I wonder, because Meredith is such a lifestyle brand, if Time and Fortune and those guys still exist. I don't know.
Well, why would you spend a lot of money to buy it if you didn't want to continue to publish it? Steve Case has created a new fund called the Rise of the Rest. I would call it the Flyover Fund.
Didn't he do this like 5 or 6 years? I swear to God, Steve Case has been traveling Middle America for a decade.
Yeah. He's raised money from Bezos and a lot of other people to fund startups. Bezos, Eric Schmidt, Starbucks chairman Howard Schultz, Tory Burch, the fashion designer, the Henry Kravis of KKNR, all Michael Milken, John Doerr, the Waltons, the Kochs, the Pritzkers, Sean Parker, Ted Leonsis, they're all putting money into this fund to foster startups in Middle America.
I'm almost 100% sure he's done this before.
Yeah. And it seems like that's not really, there's lots of reasons why startups happen and where they happen, but just because you decide that geopolitically you feel like it should be somewhere, it doesn't make that happen, even if you throw a lot of money at it. You know what I'd like to see him do? Throw money at makerspaces.
Yep.
Put that money
especially
where...
Especially with TechShop going under, makerspaces are incredibly important right now.
So TechShop was the first for-profit maker. Most makerspaces are like yours, a Benicia Makerspace, a nonprofit. But TechSpace, they thought we could make this a business. Did that go under just because you couldn't, or because there were some structural problems?
Well, I think it was a little bit of both. I think there were some structural problems. They put out a press release. Sorry, I don't have the link to it right handy, but they put out a press release kind of explaining why they went under. But it was a funding problem. But look, I mean, if you look at what TechShop, I think, was started at like $125 a month or something, and we start at $50 a month. And, you know, yeah, we're scraping by, but we're doing it. It is possible to do. But once you start adding in the layers of bureaucracy and you have to start paying a lot of people, it does become quite expensive to run even a community-based makerspace. It's not easy.
Tech Shop said that they were getting memberships, but this growth was slow and they couldn't keep people as members. And that's what funds it, right? You have to buy it. And I suspect the model was somewhat like gym memberships, where people aspirationally will buy a membership but maybe not use it a lot. There are some very heavy users, and then there's some people who effectively subsidize it by not using it infrequently.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. That's what we're doing right now is we're looking for people to become sponsors. We're looking to reach out to the business community and say, hey, look, this is an incubator for you guys too, because people come in, they learn about stuff, and then that gives you skilled laborers to hire. That can come in and work on, your projects for your business. So we're trying to get the business community involved now to sponsor this as well as a growth opportunity for skilled laborers.
I was being kind of facetious, but honestly, that's really invest in that in the flyover states, and you're investing in the future. You're investing
exactly
in a whole generation of people who will have the skills, the knowledge. You know, Jack Dorsey invented Square in a makerspace. He built the prototype, did the whole thing in a makerspace. That's what you – not that Jack Dorsey was a 12-year-old with a dream. But so you're doing a fundraiser, a crowd fundraiser. We got to get some money in here, though.
Yeah, we actually started this about 4 months ago, and we put a hold on it because a couple weeks after we started this, the hurricane season started, and then the fire started, and we said we are not going to – we want people to donate to those causes. So we actually put this on hold for a while, and we're just coming back to it now.
Good.
To try to finish this off, especially with the end of the year. People like to contribute, at least for now, to get a tax donation. We'll see what happens. But this year, you can still get a nice deduction on your taxes for contributing. So, yeah, we're trying to round this off. We've had a lot of growth, which is great, but it's slow growth. People still don't know what a makerspace is. They don't know what they can do there. And getting them in the door and showing them what they can do, it's like the light bulb goes on. They're like, wow, this is incredible. But just getting them over that threshold is tricky. So it's good growth, but it's slow growth, and we need a little bit of funding to help keep us going.
Well, I'm going to just kick in a little bit here for that. I think we should be a corporate sponsor, don't you?
Oh, thank you, Leo. Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah, that's so great.
Let me throw in on that because, and I want this to continue, and I do think it's good. It's good for us. It makes geeks.
Yeah.
It's a geek maker.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a geek factory.
It's a geek factory. So let's see. I'm going to put it on. Please enter all required. Oh, I got to do. I'll do the. I don't want to put my credit card on the air as I have done in the past. More than once. I cancel credit cards a lot these days. So I'll do that when we get off the air. But I think that's really worth doing. It's on Indiegogo. Search Indiegogo for Benicia. Benecia Makerspace.
Yeah. And we're using they acquired a company called Generosity. So we took a chance and used them. It's a subsidiary now of Indiegogo.
Oh, neat.
So yeah, just search for Generosity Benicia Makerspace. It should pop right up.
There it is. And there's a nice picture of Aaron in a Twits t-shirt, which I like.
Oh, yeah, it's like you're already sponsoring it.
Yeah, we already are. So
that was on the new screensavers when we talked about how to build a makerspace.
Yeah.
Nice. It was great.
Well, you got my corporate contribution right there. We'll put in on that. That'll be your holiday gift.
That's awesome.
Actually,
thanks,
we already sent you the food, so now
we're gonna I know. You sent me
we'll send some cash.
That was awesome.
You said your kids ate
double
it all.
Gift.
Oh my word! Yeah, the kids just ripped into it. It's like I opened it up, I set it on the thing. I'm like, I'm going to leave this here to show my wife, right? So I come back in an hour later, and all the little packages are open, and all the food's gone. They're teenagers. So.
Yeah. What are you going to do, Stacey? Yeah. Did you get yours?
I did. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We did not. There's only three people in my house, and none of them are teenagers yet.
Last
so it lasted
a long time.
my husband did come. He's like, I think most of this is packaging and not chocolate.
Oh,
and he was very disappointed. I was like, well, it's a gift basket. That's how it works.
Packaged.
He's like,
he just
very literally disappointed.
You know what? Next year, I'm sending you a basket with just a ton of chocolate in it. No just, packaging.
Just a brick of chocolate. Just a brick of chocolate. I mean, it shouldn't even be wrapped.
Do you like Ghirardelli? Because that's the local chocolate. We'll send you, actually, you know what? We'll send you Cho, T-C-H-O, which is the Silicon Valley, the chocolate of Silicon Valley.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's no, really good.
This was delicious. We all appreciated it. Apparently, some of us.
More than others.
We're just, some of us wanted more, and we're bitterly disappointed.
Oh, God, I'm going to send you another one.
I just thought it was kind of cute. Like, a 40-year-old man reduced to, like, a kid. You know?
I want more chocolate.
He's still frustrated over those toys that you get that are all twist tied in the back and you can't get them out.
Yeah,
exactly. Frustration free gift baskets.
Okay, that's the next time. That's the next time. Our show today go ahead. I don't have to go to an ad yet. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I do think it's a big opportunity missed with Amazon buying Whole Foods that they have not brought gift baskets, like high quality gift baskets. I wanted to do that for Christmas this year, but no.
Actually, Aaron, you are breaking my within less than 24-hour embargo on crowdfunding because I've been so burned by crowdfunding. Last night, Lisa and I said to each other, "Okay, no more, right? Right, no more." But you're breaking it because that's different because this I don't expect anything from that. That's just a donation.
Oh, I'm sorry, so Leo. I didn't mean to
no.
send you down that road. But
I finally sent an email to Jibo because I'm number 382. I sent them $500 in 2014 for the robot that looks around, right? So I finally sent them a note. They said, you must have received our email in October asking your address. They have my address, but it's been so long, it was the old studio. So it's probably good. So so I sent them the new address. They said, your Jibo's on the way. So maybe by next week, Stacey, we'll get rid of Jeff, and we'll have a little friend join the show. A little Jibo.
Oh. Cool.
If I can be replaced by a robot or Jeff can be replaced by a robot?
No, I would never do it. You can't. But I am curious. The Jibo, the thing that got me to send them money completely on spec is it's Cynthia Brazil, who is a very good roboticist out of MIT. And so I thought that was a pretty good ancestry. We'll see. We'll find out. It's been so long, though. Because she announced it before the Amazon Echo came out.
So, oh, wow. Yeah.
It's kind of, times have changed.
At least you're getting it.
I mean, I know all the things that the Echo does. Right. It's very disappointing.
Yeah. Do you have a Jibo?
I don't, but one of my friends does.
Yeah.
And
you're trying not to let me down easy, okay?
I'm sorry.
$29.
It's
Google
cute,
Home
though.
Mini.
It's very cute.
Stacey has a long tradition of shooting
I'm just
down.
Pooping on everything.
Maybe that should be the title of the show.
Yeah.
Stacey's pooping on everything.
Last time.
There we go.
Last time when I bought, was it a Nest IQ cam? She said, you doofus. But she was right because she wanted me to buy this thing back here, the Lighthouse, and she was right because they're a sponsor now. They weren't at the time. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. You need software solutions for your business. The last thing you want to do is Google, how to dog groomer business software. That's really a bad idea. Or yoga studio software. Or, I can go on and on. You want to go to Capterra, a free directory of over 500 categories of business software. I love going down the list of Capterra businesses because who knew? Who knew there were businesses? I mean, A/B testing software, accounting software, advocacy software, anti-spam software, apparel management software, applicant tracking software, archiving, art gallery, asset tracking, assisted living, auction, audit, augmented reality, and that's just a fraction of the A's alone. Let's say, let's go all the way to the end. Let's say you have, what's the last one in the list? Let's say you have a yoga studio. There's nothing with a Z. And you need, I have a yoga studio. I need software. So you click yoga studio software. And who knew? There's a ton of them. Mindbody, Vigaro, One Fit Stop, Zen Planner, Glowfox, Wellness Living, Frederick, Mark. There's a ton of them. Well, that's a start. That's better than Google. But now, watch, we can refine it. say, hey, you know what? I only want 4 stars. Because, by the way, these stars come from actual users like you, real reviews from real users. You can narrow it down and say, this has got to be web installed. It's got to handle 10 to 50 people. Let's see, class scheduling, yes. In member management, yes. Online payments, yes. Now, those are the criteria. We've narrowed it down. There's 18 products. Let's try this. Oh, you can click it and you can find out more about it, or you can add it to the compare. Let's check that box. Let's do that first. Wellness living. I'm just going to don't take it personally, folks, if I don't click your software. There's studio director. All right. Now we're going to do a comparison. And boy, this is, talk about useful. This is all free. I didn't have to sign up. I didn't have to do anything but go to Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/twig. You see if it's got mobile. You see what it's got, how much it costs. You get to see if it's got a free trial. There's everything. You got the website link, and then you have reviews from actual people. Hundreds of thousands of reviews are on the Capterra site, and they're very careful. They really manage these reviews. Get home on time tonight. Don't spend the day Googling software for your business. Use Capterra.com/twig. Whether you're a startup, a nonprofit, 500 categories, Capterra's got you covered. And they make it easy to find. You within minutes, you will drill down and find the thing you want. And it costs you nothing. There's no sign-up, no salesman will call. 2018 will be here before you know it. Make sure you've got the software your business needs today to help you do what you do better. Join the millions who use Capterra. Visit Capterra.com/twig today to find the software that will save your business time and you a lot of anxiety. You could, you know, sometimes, it's, in fact, it often happens around this time of year. You know, you got holiday shopping to do, got stuff to do, and your boss says, Smithers, find me some new software. But boss, I want to go home. I don't care, Smithers. Capterra.com/twig, you'll get home on time. Let's see. Some people are getting Google Home Minis that are crashing and rebooting when you listen to certain songs at high volume.
What?
Which songs?
Okay, here's some songs. Royals by Lord, Jaden Smith's Icon. If you turn it up to 100%, it will crash, at least according to Reddit. Well, all right. It does Reddit subreddit, Google Home subreddit. Actually, people on both Reddit and the Google products forums are complaining. You think it's overheat? It could be overheating. I have to say, Google's had some hardware issues with this Mini.
Yeah.
Do you have, either of you have one yet?
I have one. I'm giving it away as a white elephant gift, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't like it?
I do not.
Are you all in on the Echo?
No, I like my Google Home.
Oh.
I actually, we What's put it on our the guest Mini? List. It doesn't hear you well. It's a pain to use. Tapping the thing is just irritating.
Maybe you want the Google Home Maxi, according to Best Buy. Well, you never know, by the way, when you see these listings. But Best Buy had a listing, a placeholder that said December 11th, just a few days, a week from today, right? Or a little less. Google did say they'll get it out this year, so that means they only have a few more weeks. So the Maxi is, not the Maxi, it's the Max. I'm going to call it the Maxi because it's Mini, MIDI, and Maxi. The Maxi is the one with the speaker, the big speaker.
That understands its environment.
Self-calibrating speaker. $400 self-calibrating speaker.
So expensive. Have you guys actually heard the sound coming out? No, I haven't heard one in person yet.
No. Would anybody that we know hear it? I don't know. Google could be forced to pay 5 million UK iPhone users, oddly enough, £2.7 billion in compensation because it's, according to the Consumer Watchdog Group, actually, no, it's a class action, a consumer campaign called Google You Owe Us. They alleged that Google was unlawfully harvesting the browser histories of iPhone users without their permission. Google, you owe us. Yeah, you feel. I feel a little bad for Google. It's like your rich uncle. You know, everybody comes to him with their hand out. Although at least one state is probing Google's secret tracking of Android users. So the Connecticut Attorney General is...
he's always doing that.
George Jepson. Meet George Jepson. This is that thing that we talked about where even if you had disabled location services, Google would know where you were based on the cell phone towers. Of course, your carrier knows that.
Right.
Carrier keeps that information for quite a while and even hands it over to law enforcement. By the way, that is the subject of a Supreme Court case that is going to be maybe one of the most important cases of the year. We'll find out by spring. Supreme Court is hearing a case about whether these pen register warrants are legal. So currently, thanks to a number of court decisions, it's deemed that the location information coming out of your phone is not a search because you voluntarily conveyed that information to the phone company. So that is the current precedent. But there is a case the Supreme Court has agreed to hear about a Radio Shack robbery. The alleged perpetrator was caught because they police were able to get his phone records and were able to tie him using the phone records, tie him to the robberies. He was near the robberies in many cases. So this is going to be a fairly important decision for people who want to make who want privacy.
And they did that without a warrant, right?
Right. It's a pen register.
That's the key. I mean, you know, it's fine if I give my information to my cell phone provider, but
then they're giving it
between me and them. Yeah. They can't just take the information and give it over to somebody else. They could give it over to law enforcement, I would say, if law enforcement had a warrant to go get that information. But they can't just like say, oh yeah, sure, it's open, it's free, anybody can go find it. There's got to be some security around that.
Apple, Facebook, and Google have all filed amicus briefs urging the Supreme Court to bring Fourth Amendment law into the modern era. No constitutional doctrine should presume that consumers assume the risk of warrantless government surveillance simply by using technologies that are beneficial and increasingly integrated into modern life. Of course, Google, Apple, and Facebook have quite a dog in this hunt. We've known that this goes on. We've known that the police did not need a warrant to find your location and to track you. And of course, the cell phone companies keep years of tracking data. In fact, even have special portals just for law enforcement where the police, local, federal, anybody can go in, pay a small fee, a few dollars in most cases, and say, well, where was Leo on the night of November 29th, 1956? We will see. By June. The Supreme Court will rule on this. I don't know if arguments have, if they've had the argument. I think they had arguments, but I don't know. That would be, that's the only chance you have to really to get a Wednesday. So tomorrow, arguments, that's today rather. Wednesday. No, that was last week. Last Wednesday. Sorry. So you know.
I'm laughing because Virgil in the chat room says they could use a potato chip bag to block the tracking. Maybe that's what we all should do.
Wasn't there a worker who did that? He put his phone in a Ruffles bag, one of the small ones. Apparently they have metal, and was able to skip out on the construction site.
His company was they had built-in tracking software to track whether they were on the job or not. So he puts after lunch, he puts his phone in the chip bag and goes to a movie. I kind of think that's awesome, but you know, shame on him for not doing his job, I guess. But still, it's pretty funny.
So I don't know if your teenagers still believe in Santa, but certainly mine do, and that's why we have the Santa Tracker app from Google on my phone. And now you can take elfies around the world with the Santa Tracker app. Make sure you put it on your phone. New activities will pop up between now and Christmas Eve, including an AI drawing game, an elf dance coding game, and a virtual snowball fight. Google Santa Tracker. I put it on my phone. This is a perfect example of what a progressive web app should be. No, you should just appear on your phone and then disappear.
Yep. Have you guys, I don't know if this is new or not. Have you guys done the Google security checkup? Has that popped up for you guys?
Oh yeah. I get that all the time. Yeah.
I had not gotten it until the other day. I was like, this is awesome.
And we encourage people to do it actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I've forgotten some of these apps. I went through it the other day and I'd forgotten some of the apps that had access to my drive, for example, things like that. Stuff I had uninstalled years ago and they still had access.
You should do that for Twitter
too. Doing that.
Yes, everybody should do it. Yeah. Yeah. It's google.com/security. They offer a security checkup, but this will give you all of the things and all of the different capabilities. And the thing you're talking about is checking which apps have your Google account, right?
Yeah. If you just Google security checkup, it should be the first link in the list. And it's great. Certainly probably, I don't believe they're required to do this in any shape or form, but this popped up for me the other day and I'm like,
yeah, I really like
kudos to you, Google. Yeah. This is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I really public service announcement for the day.
let's see. We're going to wrap things up because we have to get out of here in 12 minutes. So we can get to Mr. Paul Thurrott and Windows Weekly. We're going to find out about those new ARM laptops. Crack Wi-Fi patch coming in December to Pixels and Nexi. That's important. Make sure you get – I hope you're getting those regular patches, monthly patches, and the December patch should be out any day now. Or maybe it is out. Okay, I haven't seen it yet, but I should check. Let me check out my Pixel 2.
Wouldn't it have come out yesterday? Don't they always come out on Tuesday?
No, that's Windows. Microsoft is
attached. That's Microsoft.
Tuesday.
Never mind.
I wish Google were that consistent. It isn't, though. It's just kind of usually in the first couple of weeks of the month. But you never really know. System update. Oh, you know, I'm on the 8.1 beta, so I don't know if I will be a good test of that. Yeah, I currently only have the November 5th security patch. Don't yet have the December.
That's all I still have.
Yeah. Just checking to make sure we got everything before we run. You guys have any stories you really want to get in here? Did you see the virtual cats? Have you bought virtual cats? Are you going to buy virtual cats?
Yes. No.
No. No. I mean, yes. I had not heard about them, but yes, I will buy them.
Crypto kitties, collectible. This is, I think blockchain has gone off the rails.
Yeah.
There is no value to these, but people have already spent $1 million. The most expensive kitty right now is $112,000. Just so you know, it's speculation. Because
it's gambling, guys. People spend a lot of money on gambling.
Yeah. Well, it's not even as fun as gambling. You're just hoping that you can sell it for a higher price than you buy it for.
Some people think that's really fun.
It's brilliant on the part of the designers because they aren't doing diddly do, and they're you have to install a Chrome extension for Ethereum called MetaMask, and then you're using Ethereum, the cryptocurrency Ethereum, to purchase CryptoKitties and then auction them and sell them, and what fun! I don't think there's anything involved in like feeding them or take care of them or anything like that. I think it's just. It's basically a market for virtual kitties.
I mean, I think that we're a little more mature, I would say, age-wise. But I know that my kids love this kind of stuff. I mean, every game they play, they always want. It doesn't do anything to help you in the game, but they want the latest bling.
Oh, it's big on kids. I know. This is not for kids. This is not for kids for sure. So Chuck Schumer, senator from New York, has done a good job in the past of stopping ticket buying bots. You know, it was a big problem on Broadway and its concerts where these bots would go out, scoop up all the tickets and then resell them, scalp them for higher prices. Schumer says the bots are back. He passed the Bots Act last year to protect games, concerts, and Broadway shows. Now he wants to expand it to toys. Bots can locate and I'm not surprised given that a lot of e-commerce is online now, locate the product page of a popular toy even before it goes on sale, buy them up, and then resell them to panicked parents who just have to have that Cabbage Patch Kid or the Furby toys that sell for $15 are now being sold on websites for like eBay for as much as $1,000. So Schumer is calling attention to it. I don't know if he's going to enact a law. He says we're asking the National Retail Federation and the Retail Industry Leaders Association to block the bots. They can technologically, and they should be, and I agree. What is the toy this season's toy, Stacey?
They said the Barbie Dreamhouse was doing big, and then these fuggy little puppet things, fingerlings, maybe? Fingerlings, I think, is what they're called. They're like,
fingerlings.
They're not potatoes. They're little puppets, finger puppets.
Okay, I'm really disappointed and saddened to have to report that the Winklevoss twins have taken their $11 million settlement from Mark Zuckerberg. You saw the movie. You know that they think Zuck stole Facebook from them. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. He settled, apparently, I didn't know this, for $11 million. They've invested it in Bitcoin, and they are now Bitcoin billionaires.
Wow.
Because Bitcoin's almost $12,000 now.
Yeah, just sell and change that into real money, or at least sell most of it and change it into real money.
Diversify.
Exactly.
But they did say, you know, a few years ago, they were all in on Bitcoin. And it turned out to be right, although I don't know how that happened.
And yeah, it's been crazy lately.
It's crazy. $13,000 now? Wow, that can't be. Really? This is crazy speculation. Mm-hmm. Let me look at the Coinbase. See what what's the quote for the current? Is that the place to go to get what's the best place to get the quote?
I like Coinbase.
$13,315.71, up $6,000, almost half since last month, and 88% growth since last month, and no end in sight. And my son has been texting me more and more urgently every day, saying, "Dad, you got to unlock your wallet. You got to find your wallet, because I have a Bitcoin wallet somewhere with 7 coins in it."
You really should.
$91,000 now.
Because if you let it go bust,
that would be terrible.
What are the tax implications of Bitcoin?
Oh, IRS wants to know. If you go to Coinbase, they're asking Coinbase to hand over those records to the IRS. Okay. It's taxable income. I don't know what the basis is. I didn't buy them. I don't know what to do. I don't want to pay the taxes on that. Chipotle is, I'm sorry to say, revamping its queso recipe.
Oh, if they were a gift, you would pay a gift tax. But I don't know if it was the value when they were gifted or the value now.
What's that, the burritos or the Bitcoin?
No, queso.
queso.
Taxable value of the queso.
So Bloomberg confirms Jeff Jarvis's assertion that it's grainy. That would be uncooked flour probably, right? So they are still made without artificial ingredients, but now has a creamier texture and a really nice spicy flavor, according to Chipotle spokesperson Chris Arnold.
People are saying they can taste the flour. Queso. Let's spice it up.
Well, to thicken it.
Yeah.
It's melted cheese. It's supposed to be thick. I mean, if you're saying I'm not using artificial ingredients because I'm using soybean oil, then that is a real ingredient, but it's also not a real ingredient in queso.
Well, we don't know what the ingredients are. It's a secret recipe.
Yeah.
I learned today, TIL, that you remember that Mozilla had a deal with Yahoo for search when Yahoo was sold to Verizon and turned into Oath, still the worst name in technology today. Mozilla Foundation decided to take advantage of out in their contract. On sale, if they didn't like the new company, they could stop using Yahoo and start using Google. But what I learned today was, regardless, Yahoo has to continue to pay Mozilla $375 million a year through 2019.
Oh my God, those people sucked at making deals.
Guess who? Marissa Meyer made that deal.
Wow.
That is such a terrible deal. Even if you don't use Yahoo.
Did that get stuck into, did they not notice that in due diligence? Because that's pretty material. Oh,
well, lawsuits are flying. Oath is suing Mozilla, and Mozilla is now countersuing because, well, I'm guessing it's that $375 million that's the problem. Oath at least says you got to use Yahoo if you, you know, but we'll, but Mozilla says, no, the contract is clear. We had a unilateral right to terminate based on a number of factors, including not liking the company that bought Yahoo. So back and forth and back and forth. And you know how court actions are. By the time it's done, the 375 will shrink to nothing. We're headed towards, yes, I know we just got our new emojis for 2017, but guess what? As soon as you get the new emojis, you got to start working on the next generation. One more step. We finally, I'm so relieved, we got rid of frowny poop face. This was a controversial. There were battles, we're told, raging on the Unicode Emoji Committee over the frowning pile of poo. It's been removed, as has the face with letters okay as eyes, and the frowning face with question marks as eyes. All three rejected. But good news, you will be able to flip your emojis in 2018, right to left or left to right. That's always been a problem, you know, the flag blowing the wrong way or the train going the wrong way. So now you'll be able to flip them. And they got some new, the new candidates here are here.
Bagels!
Is that what that is? I wasn't sure.
Oh, what is it? Is that a mango?
Yep. Teddy bear, mango, party face, skateboard, spool of thread. Really? Spool of thread. Now, these haven't been approved. These are just, but they are still in the running. There's a swan, curly afro hair, I guess, and red hair. Redheads finally represented in the emoji spectrum. And yeah, I think that's a bagel. I guess that's a bagel. It's not a donut.
Yeah,
that's probably why they cut it in half, right? Because otherwise you'd think it was a donut.
Oh, boy, you're smart. Yeah. And it looks like they toasted it and put butter on it. And now I'm hungry.
Yeah. No cream cheese, no lox. I skipped lunch because
Well, let's wrap it up. Let's get your picks, and we'll have a final word in a moment. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, we love them, the best lender in the country. Really, honestly, number one in customer satisfaction year after year after year. They just got it again for 2017. That's 8 years running now from J.D. Power. And that's number one in customer satisfaction for loan approval. Also number one in customer satisfaction for 4 years running for loan origination. Number one. That means customers love them. And I love them even more because Quicken Loans has come up with a mortgage approval process that is completely online. They realized that the experience wasn't keeping up with the times. So they have created Rocket Mortgage, lets you completely understand what's going on. It's fast. It's convenient. You don't have to go to the attic to get paperwork because Quicken Loans trusted partners will allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. So literally everything you need is right there. You can answer the questions they ask from your top of your head. It's easy. And then within minutes, you're going to get approved for a loan or loans based on your income, assets, and credits that are right for you. And you choose the down payment. You choose the term. You choose the rate. Rocket Mortgage. You got to love this from Quicken Loans. Apply simply. Understand fully. Mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. rocketmortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Next time you get a home loan or refi, save time, save money. Do it right. Do it the way you would want to do it, on your phone, at the open house, like right then. rocketmortgage.com/twig. Stacy, surely you have a thing.
I have two things.
Two things?
Because one's pretty limited, I feel. And the other thing is old. So, but I just discovered it. So maybe you guys don't know about it. So my first thing is for Tesla owners only. Sorry. But there's the My Tesla skill on Amazon. And I was at
a trade show.
Yeah. Someone was like, have you tried this yet? And I was like, I have not. But now I have. And it's super fun. And you can even say, ask my car, dude, where's my car? Which I enjoy.
You can literally say the words dude.
Yeah. Yeah. You can also just say, where is my car? But it's way more fun to say, dude, where's my car?
I like it.
So those are the commands you can do. And
I'm adding it right now.
The most cool. Yeah, I'll say that. The start charging command is very helpful because sometimes you forget to start your, you plug it in, but like the schedule, it's scheduled for something and you need to go.
Yes. You know what? Then I would plug it in every time and then I'd just say start charging. That's nice.
There you go. Yeah. So there in C when you, you're like, crap.
But you have to say, you have to say, Echo dude, where's my car? Right? You have to say the trigger word.
You have to say, Madam A, ask car. Or tell car, where's my car? Because tell car is the opening the skill.
This is the problem with all these skills. They're so arcane.
But have fun. Play with that. See what you think. So that's for the small percentage of people who have a Tesla. But for the rest of us, which is everyone who likes Harry Potter, I put this on the list because I didn't know it existed. Kevin Toefel, my co-host on my show, was like, yeah, this has been out since like 2014. But new to me, I don't care. It's a remote control wand that converts IR to Wi-Fi. Or no, I'm sorry. It does not convert to Wi-Fi.
Expecto CSI Las Vegas.
I'm sorry. It does not convert it to Wi-Fi. My bad. But what it does is you program your remote with this thing. It's just an IR remote, basically, that you program. Yeah.
Is it and gesture so you can, based?
Yes. Yes, it is. And that is why it's fun. So
did
you
see,
scroll down, you can see.
I think it's apocryphal. The Tesla, the guy who said he turned the computer in his Tesla into a Bitcoin miner, and he's using the free power from the supercharger to run it.
Yes, I did see that.
that's got to be a joke.
He's going to get a nasty gram from Elon
is not going to be happy. That is definitely not. He could actually
not kosher for your charger.
He could take your Tesla back.
He could shut it down. It could be like, you know what? Because didn't they send out those letters to people in California? Like, you can't charge here anymore?
Right.
These things
so are
smart.
You giving the TV remote wand to everybody in your household?
I'm giving it to my mom because she's a huge Harry Potter fan. It's hysterical. And she likes watching TV. So, yes.
Lumos.
I'm going to go get one because for makers, that's great. You can have an IR.
You can
add an IR receiver to your project, right? Now you can do a spell and make LED lights go off and all kinds of stuff.
Skip us commercialists.
There you go.
So it's kind of expensive, but it's pretty cool.
I like it.
Maybe I'll just build one.
Aaron Newcomb, your tip this week.
Yeah, so actually, you try to do a project. We'll see if my voice holds out. Try to do a project every week. and this week, it is something I built for work. It's actually the – I don't know if you can see this.
Let's see if I can get it. It's a big red button.
Whoop.
Whoa.
I call it the holiday cheer box, and it's a big red button on a green box, and it's pretty simple. When you press the button, it plays some sort of holiday sound. So let's see if you can hear this.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Aw, is that your
I don't know
kid?
If you can hear that, okay.
It says press here for holiday cheer.
Press here for holiday cheer. Let's try it again.
Hey Santa, what's shaking, man?
So there's a bunch of just random sounds that I, picked up from around the internet on there. And when someone walks by, if they're feeling a little blue or something, they can just press the button and it'll play a little sound. Maybe it'll cheer them up. I don't know. So it's just something fun, super easy. Use an Arduino Nano and a little sound module that you can buy off of eBay or wherever. You hook the two things up. I'm going to publish this on an Instructable. I tried to get it done in time for the show, but life. Follow me on Instructables. I'll put up an Instructable on how to build your own a little bit later on today.
What, Instructables.com/Aaron Newcomb or?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I've got it.
Newcomb.
Yeah, just do a search on Instructables and be looking out for it later today. It's fun. And then the cool thing about this is you can build it into anything you want. So, if you're having a Harry Potter party with your magic IR wand, you could build one that does Harry Potter sounds or whatever you want. You can turn it into anything. So it's fun.
I like it.
Or just when you swivel your wand, it'll make a noise.
It'll make the noise go off. Perfect. I'm doing it.
Then you sound fancy.
Yeah.
All of your friends will be impressed.
I'm going to channel Jeff Jarvis and have a number of the week, and it's a number that is near and dear to my heart. In 2017, digital ad spending, $209 billion worldwide, beating TV, $178 billion, for the first time ever. Digital ad spending. That's not just podcast. I wish it were podcasts, but it's mostly banners. But still, that is a big watershed event, and it's by a big margin. And in fact, it's going to only get bigger. So good news for digital. People are making money doing it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being here for this week in Google's. Thanks to Stacey Higginbotham, Stacey on IoT.com, at Giga Stacey on Twitter. And don't forget our podcast with Kevin Toefel, all about the Internet of Things. We'll see. Will you be here next week?
I will be, unless you don't invite me back.
I invite you back. You have an invitation. You must appear. I'm going to, in fact, subpoena you.
Oh, excellent. Let me call my lawyer.
You have no choice. You have no choice. Thank you, Stacey. Aaron Newcomb, thank you so much for filling in. It's really great to have you. And again, generosity.com. Look for the Benicia Makerspace fundraiser. A very good cause. It's a great thing. And, you know, I think somebody should call Steve Case and say, you really want to help innovation in this country. Help makerspaces.
Yep,
Can I add something?
I agree.
Oh. Yes.
Go ahead.
I keep thinking you're saying Venetia, like Venice, like the city in Italy. But you're really saying Benicia. Benicia.
With a B. Yep.
Yeah. So I didn't see it until I was like, no wonder I couldn't find it.
Yeah. Not so. Venetia. Is this a problem Chevy?
I'm surprised there's not a Venetia.
This is actually the problem Chevy has with their Bolt and Volt. It's the same. Yeah. It sounds the same.
Sounds the same.
B as in Bravo, E-N-E-C-I-A for Benicia.
You got it.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Twig. Normally, this was an early one because we're flip-flopping. In fact, Windows Weekly just around the corner with a very special Hawaiian edition. Don Ho will be singing. But normally, we do it at about 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Wednesdays. That's 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Please stop by and watch at twit.tv/live. If you're going to do that, you might as well be in the chat room. It's a lot of fun. And I steal all their best jokes. irc.twit.tv. Let me steal your joke. If you can't be here in person, well, you can always watch after the fact. On-demand audio and video. Everything we do is available at our website, twit.tv. For this show, it's twit.tv/twig. Or please subscribe. Get in there to your favorite podcasting app and subscribe. Because subscriptions really help us make sure we have a consistent audience. That means you. We want you to be here every week. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.